Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
Students and faculty at a local college have recently published their research that has profound implications for the treatment of cancer and diabetes. Let's go in depth with Professor James Shriver and student Caitlin Wang with Central College. Well, congratulations on the paper that you've just completed in RSC Advances, the Royal Society of Chemistry Advances. Very prestigious, the Royal Society's very famous, I mean, very prestigious for hundreds of years, right?
Yep. So that's one reason I chose that kind of array of journals. I've in prior times, I've worked with them some. I've done a lot of peer review with the Royal Society for both the journal we ended up in, as well as Chemical Communications and Organic and Biomolecular Chemistry, kind of those three journals. I've done a lot of reviewing work and peer review.
Well, and Katie, it's like you're in the big leagues already and student at Central College. That's outstanding.
Thank you. I don't know if I feel that way quite yet, but I appreciate that.
Now, Professor Shriver, could you tell us the title? I can't even pronounce the title. In fact, that was one of the reasons I was intrigued. When I don't know anything, I want to see if somehow I can learn about it.
Okay.
Can you pronounce it once for us?
So the title is Exploring an Anomaly, the Synthesis of 7-7' Diaza Endorubin Through a 7-Aza Indoxal Intermediate.
So. Okay. Well, that's great. Can you say that in English?
Actually, the coming up really, the preamble to that title on anomaly really comes from the fact that we are working with a compound called endorubin. A lot of promise with that compound potentially for medicinal applications, but it's very closely related to another compound, and that's called indigo. Which probably you've probably heard of indigo. It's this Yes. It's color of the rainbow. It's a famous blue dye, comes from plant sources, fermented plants. Some of my research, it's been developed independently in South America, Egypt, China, Europe. There's a number of plants that produce precursors to indigo. Blue jeans are dyed with indigo, for example. We tend to think of it as a little bit purple when we think about the rainbow. But it's actually really sharp blue. The little bit of purple is because of endorubin, which is usually found as a minor impurity in indigo. So that's the compound we're looking at. Now, the anomalous part is that most of the time when you're doing syntheses similar to what we were doing, you make indigo. You always make indigo and a little bit of endorubin. We found an example where you make only endorubin. And then we're kind of starting to tease out the periphery of that to see, can this be applied or adapted, or can we tweak conditions to make that the normal in other examples? So that's kind of where we're at in the project and why that title came to be. So it's really that 7-Aza indol is the precursor, and it's the one that acts weird. So that's the anomaly part of it.
Okay. And indigo, as you said, it comes from plants, and I've read that it comes from snail shells too, some snail shells. Is that right?
There is an indigo that comes from snail shells. That's actually 6-6' dibromo indigo, which is known to most as Tyrian purple. That's that royal purple that became the royal color. It is actually another indigo, so it's a slightly different shape. So it's got these bromine groups on it. I actually have a student working with that one right now, and we've made the dibromo endorubin, which is kind of the analog endorubin to that indigo. And it works pretty well. We found conditions where we can get the bromo version of indigo to work really well. So that's not published yet. That's really something we discovered this semester. Katie actually did the first reaction, and another student is starting to take over pieces of that because unfortunately, Katie's going to graduate. So I'm starting to work with other students to get them to kind of carry on this project in the future.
More in depth after this.
I continued my discussion with Professor James Shriver and student Caitlin Wang with Central College about their research. Well, Katie, tell us about how you got involved with this. I presume you're a chemistry major.
I'm actually a biochem major, so close. So I had begun doing research with Dr. Shriver the second semester of my freshman year. I was wanting to work with something, and he was a faculty member that I had had classes with. So I went and asked if I could work with him. And we actually didn't start this project until I had gotten back from being abroad. And that was the summer of after my sophomore year. He had worked on it with another student, and they had kind of done some preliminary studies. But ultimately it was in that time, that 10-week summer, 10 weeks during the summer, that things kind of got moving, and then it followed up again this last summer.
But tell me the emotional, intellectual reaction that you have when you think, okay, here's something that I think I want to participate in. I want to tackle this. What goes through your mind? What's that decision-making process, and what's the spark for you?
Honestly, being a freshman who had only completed general chemistry, I was pretty nervous. I had no idea what was going on. I remember going to the lab. I could barely figure out how to measure what I needed to and put it in. I knew how to do the math, and I think that was about it. And so there were a lot of nerves in that, and just a lot of built up, okay, I don't know if I'm good enough to do this. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I ended up actually getting the summer research. And I think that just having that intensive time, that was kind of the spark, wow, I can do this, and I can see progress in what I've done. And that was really kind of exciting for me, because I could look back. I mean, I have lab notebooks. I have I think 2.5 of them filled out. And even just looking back and seeing all the reactions I've ran in just the short amount of time that I've been here has been very valuable, and better understanding that I can do it kind of thing. A little bit of a feel good.
And then what you learned as part of this process, you can then take that same process, the same steps that you went through, and probably apply it to a diverse set of problems.
I would say so, yeah. Understanding that the biggest challenge I had for a long time was, okay, this didn't work, and not being I can't do absolutely anything now. But being able to problem solve and come up with, okay, if this doesn't work, what did we learn? What can we do something? What else can we do to make it work? Or what can we do to try and use, this didn't work, to find something that will? And I think that that is very valuable, because I understand that it's okay to fail and be able to take those failures and make something of it. Because honestly, the reactions we were doing, there were several that didn't work, or we reran at different temperatures, we ran under different conditions. We had to change something. And I think even saying that, okay, well, we can change the temperature by 20 degrees can make all the difference. And that was valuable to see that it doesn't have to be a big change every single time. It's not a big new project every single time. Just little things can, learning to find what those little things are is kind of the biggest lesson I took from that.
More in depth after this.
I continued my discussion with Professor James Shriver and student Caitlin Wang with Central College about their research. Professor, can you tell us a little bit about the medical applications to this and where you're going now with this?
Okay. Part of that is really the application side of things. My training is as a synthetic organic chemist, so it's often finding interesting molecules. And actually that 7-azo indol was chosen as a starting point because it's also had some interesting signs in medicinal application. So the way that indirubin appears to work is actually a pretty interesting mechanism. So it binds to a spot on an enzyme that typically likes to bind ATP, adenosine triphosphate. So I don't know if you've heard that term, but it's a pretty standard term. It would probably be covered in a high school biology class, ATP. So a lot of times to make things happen, so it actually works on something called a kinase, if you think of kinetic or movement. It binds to a kinase, and if it's working there, it can stop function. So for the longest time, actually, kinases weren't targeted very much because they all work very similarly. But they're finding that there can be selectivity between different kinases. So what's nice with indirubin is we can easily make different flavors, right? We can stick different groups on the indirubin. I think that's one of the potential advantages of the method. Where, again, we're really still early in this process. This is really the first paper. We found this anomaly and we tried to probe a little bit, okay, why do we see this? But really, we still need to flesh out how can we apply this to the next step. So I'm imagining the next 2 or 3 years really is creating a bunch of different compounds and figuring out exactly the limitations of this reaction. We know some of them, right? Those failures that Katie had noted. But there's a lot we don't know. We just discovered that we can have a huge effect with temperature, more so than we initially thought. I think it explains some of the things we saw earlier in research. We've been able to really promote indirubin synthesis in other examples where we're still seeing primarily indigo synthesis. So we're really tweaking this. But again, ultimately, my hope is to find some collaborators really more that have more biological background, a biological sciences background that can kind of do studies. Again, they've done studies on enzymes. They've actually done in vivo studies in mice with certain things here and there. And they've seen some efficacy in kind of stopping of tumor growth in certain cancers.
I guess you're going to have to explain it to me in the sense that it could be used to help treat diabetes, cancer, stuff like that. How would it be applied? I mean, you're going to mess with my genetic material. You're going to give me a pill.
Okay.
An injection, how's it going to work?
No, it would likely be taken orally, though potentially injectable. So one of the challenges that indirubin you would have is if not the most soluble, you would need to tweak the structure to make it more what is called bioavailable, right? So your body can use it. A lot of that science has actually been done by others. We don't need to reinvent that science. We've tested it on our compounds, making something called an oxime, and it works readily, but you have to do some derivatization to make it bioavailable. It could be oral. It could be potentially injectable. But the way it would work is, again, it wouldn't do anything really to the DNA. It would stop an enzyme from working. So it would prevent a pathway. So if you can deliver it selectively to cells that you don't want to grow, for example, you could maybe target a cancer. Of course, like any chemotherapeutic, right, it's going to target both what you want to attack, but also what you don't want to attack. So I think those logistics would be worked out ultimately. And really, that isn't my background. And I think that's the cool way of thinking about science. It's broadly collaborative. Hopefully, this is a tool that others can use to develop some real treatment. I don't see myself being the one developing those treatments, but if we can supply easy access, another advantage to our process is we can do it on really, really big scale. We can make a lot, which that's a limitation for most of what we've seen in the literature. Usually they're making very small quantities. We have scaled this up where we can make multi-gram quantities pretty readily.
Katie, how does it feel to be working on research that maybe 10 years from now or whatever could be saving countless lives, lots of misery, lots of pain, improving the quality of lives for people? How does that feel that you've had a hand in something that can impact so many people and their families in such a positive way?
Honestly, I think it's kind of exciting, not only just for the science side of it, but because there is that impact. I mean, I want to go to medical school. That's something I'm passionate about, helping people, making them feel better. And so I think that being able to maybe one day see what we began doing when I was, 19 years old, could have an effect in the future is really exciting. And I mean, that is, there's a long way that we still need to go to do that, but just kind of having something out there that could potentially help is exciting in itself.
Well, your family must be very proud of you.
I would say so, yes.
All right, and Professor Shriver, how does this feel for you to be not only doing this, but also providing the guidance for students that will then build upon this and take it elsewhere, build fantastic careers, and then other researchers taking it, who knows what direction? How does that feel?
It's actually pretty exciting. I think about my own career and path. The transformative moment in my education that made me want to get a PhD and be a professor was actually an undergraduate research project with a professor named Bjorn Soderberg, who is at WVU, West Virginia University. So he had just moved there, and I got to work on this really cool project. Interestingly, also using indoles, which is why I shifted back to this. Honestly, that's been my passion. That's why I chose this career, is to work with students doing this. This project, I think, is a little extra special in some ways. I served in an administrative role here at Central for about 5 years. Came back to the faculty. Really, my first year back was the year that Katie was a freshman and she had me for intersections. So this is a new research line. To have this success and really start to build interest has been amazing. I've got two freshmen that are going to join me in the spring. I just really look forward to working with students, not just their senior year, though I work with students just their senior year, but to have the opportunity maybe to work with three years and see them grow as a scientist. Right, the first couple of years, really, you're just learning how to do stuff in the lab. The understanding what's going on takes some time, and sometimes you don't have time to get there if you start too late. But again, that starting early, which I had the opportunity to do with Katie, has been wonderful.
Thanks to James Shriver and Caitlin Wang for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.